Now our main topic today, the book Wild by Cheryl Strait, who just arrived, and it's a book about her trek along the Pacific Coast Trail back in the mid-90s. The book is absorbing for several reasons, and here's one. Strait is so direct, so revealing, so forthright about herself and the world around her that it's been said of her that fierceness is her medium. Her book now is out in paperback. It's being made into a film starring Reese Witherspoon. Cheryl Strait authors the Dear Sugar advice column in The Rumpus, and she's dispensing advice right here after her tough trip into our studios from KCI. And welcome, Cheryl. So good to have you in Kansas City today.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
Well, you began your hiking journey in 1995, but the book didn't come out until last year. Why did it take you so long to get this story down?
Well, it didn't really take me long. I just didn't feel the need to write it until I did. I began writing it in 2008. I always felt like until I had something to say about that journey, I didn't want to write it. Of course, it was an exciting trip, and I would tell people about it at dinner parties and such, and people would always say, you have to write about it. But I think the writer's mission is to bring meaning to the story. It's not just what happened. It's what did it mean? And it took me some years to really have a perspective on the experience.
So it had to simmer for a while, you're saying?
It had to simmer. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, at the start of your trek, you describe in great detail, and I just love this, just how heavy your backpack was. In fact, at one point, you're hitching a ride to the start of the trail, and a man giving you the ride can barely lift the backpack out of the van that you were riding in. How heavy was that thing?
Well, the one thing I didn't bring on my hike is a scale.
Probably smartly, right?
They're pretty much the only thing. It was so heavy. I'm going to guess it was 75 or 80 pounds. I know the first day that I set out, I had 24 and a half pounds of water alone.
Right, right.
And then I had brought, like, I made the very typical novice backpacker mistake. I had brought too much stuff, and I learned the hard way.
Well, I kept waiting for you in those early days for you to start throwing stuff off a cliff somewhere, and you didn't throw it. You kept going with what you brought, right?
That's right. Well, part of the problem is I was an avid day hiker, but I'd never gone backpacking. So I thought, well, maybe this is just how it is to be a backpacker. And I didn't see another human being the first 8 days of my hike. So I had nobody to compare myself against. It wasn't until, it was kind of like if you're dressed up in a bear suit, and then you go, then you see a real bear, and you realize, oh, I'm not a bear.
You know, it was so interesting to me about your journey here. You were no stranger to the outdoors. You had spent a lot of time outdoors growing up. But this backpacking gig that you took on, you took it on not having ever gone backpacking before, and yet you take on the Pacific Coast Trail right out of the gate.
Pacific Crest Trail,
Crest
yes.
Trail. Yeah, that's a pretty big bite of the apple, Cheryl.
I know. Well, I've always been a little bit crazy and a lot ambitious and idealistic. I knew that, you know, I wanted to do something big. I wanted to do something incredible and difficult. And so just going on a few day hikes wasn't going to do the trick.
You wanted to do something difficult. Why?
Because I was really in this difficult moment in my life, or I shouldn't say moment, really an era. About 3.5 years before I decided to take my hike, my mother had died very suddenly of cancer at the age of 45. I was a senior in college, and there were so many things that happened when I lost my mom. Really, essentially, my world fell apart. My family fell apart. I was trying to figure out who I was, like all of us have to do in our 20s. And I was dealing with this enormous grief. I didn't know how to deal with it. And so I self-destructed. I did things that made me less happy rather than more happy in the face of that loss.
So why is hiking, taking yourself on a 1,000-mile hike, the answer to all of that?
Well, I didn't know for sure that it was going to be the answer. What I knew is that I'd reached bottom. I was married at the time. I had destroyed that marriage, done all kinds of things you're not supposed to do when you're married. I had begun using heroin, which was a really dark, hard thing in my life. And I wasn't doing any of the things that were good for me, any of the things that make us whole people. And I really felt at this place in my life where I thought for the first time, well, why am I here? And maybe I shouldn't be here.
So were you cleansing yourself? Were you punishing yourself? What were you doing?
I think all of the above.
Yeah.
My first instinct, I think, is I knew that the wilderness was the place that I felt most gathered, most at peace. I think your listeners, many of them will be nodding their heads. When we go
As
for
I
a
am.
Walk in
yeah.
the woods, or the prairie or wherever that place is, that wild place, you can hear your own voice again and you can gain some perspective on your life. And so I knew that the wilderness would give me that if I just put myself into it. And so I just decided to do that.
How long did it take you on your journey? Because the first few days are so filled with struggle and angst, and you're bleeding and you're falling and the steer is running towards you and all these things are happening. How long did it take you to sort of get into a place where you could sort of begin to appreciate what was around you and begin to process whatever you needed to process?
Well, every day on the trail was difficult. You know, and the whole hike. But you're right. At the very beginning, it was really like, what am I doing here? This is too much. It's too hard. And I'd gone out there thinking of spiritual redemption and emotional healing. And instead, I was really cast into the physical realm. Like you say, you know, my body was actually bleeding in places where my pack was chafing.
Yeah.
I had taken the wrong kind of gas in my stove. I couldn't cook my food.
Yeah.
All kinds of things. It was so much harder than I thought it would be physically. But in retrospect, and even then, I could see, well, maybe this is exactly what I needed to just get my head out of that place of self-destruction and grief and into, where am I going to find water? What's next?
Yeah.
And it has a really powerful accumulative effect when you do have to work hard to cover every mile and take it step by step and really move forward in a physical way, which is exactly what I needed to do emotionally.
I love the beginning of your journey because you begin by describing this moment when you're finally out on the trail after the trip and you got your stuff and your backpacks on and you're moving forward. And there's this moment where you describe yourself as thinking, I'm on the trail. I'm hiking. I'm actually doing it finally.
Yeah.
And then almost immediately you're writing, oh my God, this is hard. What have
That's
I gotten
right.
myself into? And you're going through the Mojave Desert, Cheryl.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, and there was that. You know, I don't think I'm alone in this. Is when you imagine certain things, you know, it's one thing to imagine them and another to do them. And it's humbling. It's a humbling thing to put a really heavy pack on your back and walk up a mountain and then down the other side of it in the Mojave Desert. And I learned that really quickly. And that was another thing. I had really made a bunch of bad decisions in the few years before my hike. And I really, on that trail, I felt like though it was hard, I was making a good decision. I was doing something that was really allowing me to test my strength in a positive way. And so even though you asked, well, when did I start to say, wow, I'm so lucky to be here? Every day it was hard and every day it was beautiful. My mom, who was this wonderful person, who she loved me and my siblings in the way you hope
a mother.
I would
have loved to have met her after the way you described her. I would have liked to have known her.
Thank you. She was one of those extraordinary people who had a very ordinary life. But one of the things she gave me was her great optimism. And she used to always say, we all have the opportunity to have beauty every day because there's a sunrise and a sunset.
Yeah.
And on the PCT, I was in that sunrise and sunset every day. And so I always had beauty, even when it was hard.
Well, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little more about your mom. We'll talk about putting on your backpack and how you managed to lug that 80-pound thing on your back and the sort of antics you went through to get that thing strapped to your back. We'll take your questions, too, for Cheryl Strait. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Our email address is up to date at kcur.org. I should point out that Cheryl Strait will be appearing at 7 tonight at Unity Temple on the Plaza. To get a seat, call our friends at Renovate Books in Fairway, 913-384-3126. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. This hour, we're visiting with the author of the bestseller, Wild. It's written by Cheryl Strayed. Again, she appears tonight at 7 at Unity Temple on the Plaza. To get a seat, call Renaday Books in Fairway, 913-384-3126. And if you've read the book, and I know so many of you have, and have a question for Cheryl, 816-235-2888 is our phone number here, our email address, update@kcur.org. How did you get your backpack on your back? Because you sort of went through a limbo thing to get that thing strapped to yourself and get going.
Well, I couldn't lift it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was impossible to lift it. So I had to sit down on my rump and do this little sort of rocking razzmatazz to actually and hurl myself forward onto my hands and knees. And then I would sort of do this kind of deadlift from that position. It was really hard and kind of hysterical.
When you first got dropped off and the truck goes away, I think you had the sense that the driver was going to be looking out his rearview mirror to see if you could get the damn thing strapped to your back.
That's right.
And you very pointedly sort of sat there and waited until he drove far, far away.
I didn't want to do it in front of anyone because it was humiliating. I mean, what's this woman doing out here by herself when she can't even lift her own pack, you know? And so I got it on my back. Once it was on my back and I did that deadlift, make no mistake, I could not stand up. I was hunched, as I say in Wild, in a remotely upright position.
Wasn't that this incredibly ominous sign that you were heading over the abyss because of your situation with that backpack?
It was, and yet I was so determined. I, at that moment in my life when I decided to take that hike, I really felt that I had failed so powerfully, so significantly. And I can't really overstate that. I really felt like I had squandered everything good about myself. And so the one thing I had to do is the thing that I said I was going to do, and that was hike that trail. I didn't even think about not moving forward with that heavy pack. I had to get it on my back and move.
Now, this is the wrong thing to say, but reading the book, I liked your husband, your first husband.
Thank you.
I really liked him.
It's not the wrong thing to say.
He comes off so well in the book. He's a good guy.
He is a good guy, and I love him, and he loves me. We got married too young, and then I had this really very life-changing thing happen to me. My mom died and my family fell apart. And I was just too young to sustain that bond. But we have sustained it in other ways. You know,
that's
he has
neat.
A great life and I have a great life. We're both married to other people. We both have kids. And he was really supportive of the book. He really loves Wild.
You know, I was going to ask you about your immediate family, too, your brother and your sister, I think, if I remember right. And in the book, after your mom dies, your hope was that you would become the family beacon and that you would be the rallying point occasionally for folks to get together.
Right.
And very quickly, you found out, Cheryl, that just wasn't happening, that everyone sort of in their own grief and their struggles, they sort of went off in their own personal spaces. Where are you today?
That's true. I sort of thought I could step in and replace my mom.
Replace your mom.
And anyone who's lost their mom knows, at least most of our moms, actually have a really powerful position in the family. And some of that is not even visible until that person is gone. And so I couldn't be my mom. I was this 22-year-old college senior, and I didn't have the ability to sustain whatever she did. My siblings and I love each other. And we still are connected, but we never have had that same close-knit family that we had growing up.
Yeah.
We don't spend holidays together, but we love each other and we stay connected. And they, too, have been really supportive of the book. My stepfather, I don't have a relationship with him that's very active, but I certainly have a lot of love in my heart for him. And so, I think a lot of times people are so terrified when they think about writing about their life or writing a memoir, will the people in my life be upset? And I think what I did is I tried to really be as honest as possible while also being really loving. And I couldn't have gotten to that place had some years not passed, that there was some time for forgiveness and for letting go.
You know, I think it's fair to say you were really honest in this book. Your candor is almost breathtaking at times. You get the sense you didn't leave anything on the table as you wrote this book. And I'm wondering, was that difficult for you in any way? Or were you just at a point where you thought, I'm going to tell my story? As so many folks are, I guess, these days. You get a sense that we're in a different age in this country where people are comfortable sharing the most intimate of things.
Yeah.
What was that like for you?
Well, you know, Wild is just one of my books. I've written three books. And my mission as a writer is to tell the story of what it means to be human. And what I mean by that is what it really means. You know, what are the things that we conceal? What's the difference between the private self and the public face? You know, literature is not about presenting a facade.
Yeah.
It's about examining the human condition. And in fiction, you know, my first book is a novel. I did that with by building fictional characters and being very revealing about them. And in nonfiction, I used myself as that character. And of course, that's terrifying.
Yeah.
Before Wild came out in hardcover last year, for the couple months before it came out, I really thought, what have I done? I was so afraid. Because if people don't like your book when you write a memoir, and of course, some people aren't going to, there's no accounting for taste.
They don't like you, you're saying.
They don't like you. And so that, and I've, as somebody who's always, like most people, you know, wanted to be loved, and especially in my writing, you know, that's really my heart on the page. In my books. And so it hurts when people reject your book. But when the book is about you, they're also rejecting you.
You know, it's interesting, even in my own life, you know, I'm a little older than you are, but I'm thinking, you know, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, if I had read this book, I wonder how I would have reacted, if I would have thought, oh, you know, she had so many problems. Oh, there were so many
right.
flaws. But today you come in this studio and I admire you. I just think
Thank you.
You know, there's a sense of, you know, by George, you did it. I feel like I really learned something by reading this. And I'm just wondering, even in that quarter century, if we've sort of flipped in terms of how we look at people who are so open about themselves in such an honest way.
Yeah, I think that, well, I think a lot of people, and maybe this is starting to happen even in the culture at large, is we're finding that judgmentalism isn't interesting. It's not interesting to be judgmental because what you're doing is putting up a wall between you and someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't mean you can't have an opinion, that you can't be curious, that you can't have a sense of what's right and wrong. But when I come up against somebody who has a very different experience than me, I try to remind myself that I'm curious about them. I want to know where they're coming from.
I feel
from.
The same way.
And it's the minute you say, well, you know, and you get judgmental, is you've closed yourself off to anything that you can learn from them.
Do you think we're in a different place societally at large, you know, today versus a while ago? Am I right? Is my thesis correct, Cheryl?
I think your thesis is correct. And I can say as a writer, what I see is this movement among
Absolutely.
Writers to say, let's be increasingly fearless. And I don't think that this is something that we've invented, but I do think that each generation pushes the envelope a little further.
Yeah.
And that's really interesting.
I think that's exactly right. Cheryl Strait is our guest. Her book is titled Wild. She speaks at Unity Temple on the Plaza tonight at 7. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888, and our email address, uptodate@kcur.org. Let's go to some calls. And Nathan from Kansas City, Missouri, you're on with Cheryl Strait. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi,
oh,
Nathan.
Hi, Cheryl. Wow, welcome to Kansas City.
Thank you so much.
So amazing. This is very freaky because I turned on the radio and I'm listening to you talk about almost exactly the same kind of moment that I had when I was about 19. I had set off from K-State to walk to Oberlin College because I just thought I needed a better life to put on the backpack and set off. I didn't make it as far as you did.
How cool that you did that, though. How far did you go?
25 miles. I made it to Wamego, and then my knee buckled on me.
But I like the spirit.
I found out that I had to revisit my life and not, you know, do that super amazing thing that, you know, that you were able to do. I had to really kind of go back and reevaluate and see where I really stood in life. So my hike, it certainly didn't end by any means by my knee, you know, giving out. But then again, I didn't get to, you know, do that full on. Oh my God.
Yeah.
The thing that you just did. Wow, that's amazing.
But it gave you that sense of that you needed to shift and examine some things and maybe live a little
indeed.
Differently.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Did you read The Walk Across America? How were you inspired by just doing that? Just going?
Yeah, I didn't. You know, honestly, I didn't even know that National Scenic Trails existed until that I picked up the Pacific Crest Trail guidebook and essentially decided on the spot to hike the trail. I'd never heard of a National Scenic Trail. I knew, of course, you know, I'd done day hikes and I'd hiked in the Grand Canyon, and I just didn't know that there was a trail that long. And it was only, so I just went into it very innocently, not knowing. And of course, it was 1995, so there wasn't, you know, we weren't really on the internet. Some people were on the internet, but I certainly wasn't. Most of the listeners probably weren't. And so it wasn't like you could tap into the net and find all these people who had hiked long trails.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure.
So I just sort of went out there and found what I got. I met people along the way who knew more than me, and that was educational.
Mm-hmm. To say the least, I'm sure.
Yep.
Wow. Thank you.
Nathan, thanks for the call. We appreciate it.
You bet.
You bet.
Tough enough.
Tell that story about how you came across the guidebook. You were in an REI store, the outdoor outfitter store, just checking out, I think, and you stumbled across the book about the trail that you really hadn't known anything about.
That's right. I was there to buy a little foldable shovel. There had been a blizzard. I was living in Minneapolis at the time. And I was just to kill time. There was this row of books near the cash register, and I picked one up, and it was called The Pacific Crest Trail, Volume 1, California.
Yeah.
A lot of books have changed my life. Who knew that that guidebook would be one of them? But it was. And it, on the back, it told the story of the PCT, a National Scenic Trail.
Which sort of mirrored your own life in some ways.
That's right. Well, the trail was designated in 1968, 10 days after I was born. I was born in 1968. And it goes from Mexico to Canada, through California, Oregon, and Washington, up the crest of the Sierra Nevada and the Cascade Range. And I just thought, what a wondrous thing. And you know, all of your listeners, even if you never set foot on that trail, it is a wondrous thing, and it belongs to all of us. And the people who came before us protected that corridor, that we can go to truly a wild place.
You didn't decide to take the trek right at that moment. It sort of percolated for a while.
Yeah, pretty quickly, though. Yeah.
But it was a while before you actually began, though.
Well, yes, because, you know, as much as, you know, I get a lot of like, oh, she didn't prepare. And I'll grant you, there were some things that I learned the hard way out there. But truly, the 4 or 5 months before I began my hike. So I came across this book in December of 94. I began my hike in June of 95. So in those 4 or 5 months, I did nothing but prepare. I, you know, got my boxes all ready that I had to mail myself with dehydrated food and supplies. I mapped the course. I did as much preparation as I thought possible.
And you sent those boxes to post offices sort of along the trail.
That's
these
right.
Dusty, remote,
tiny places
where you can pick stuff up as you go along.
And sometimes just a ranger station or just a bar, you know. I mean, the trail is so much more remote than I imagined it would be.
And do people who receive those boxes sort of know we're just going to hang on to this until you arrive at some point, that people walk along the trail and do that?
Yes.
Then?
The people who live in the towns along the trail, you know, are familiar with this practice. It's, you know, the Appalachian Trail is a much more populated trail. First of all, it's, you know, going through a more populated region. But yeah, the PCT, those towns, they know, okay, the PCT hikers are going to be sending their boxes to us. And they just hold them.
Why did you start out south in the desert, which, again, as I was reading those pages, I'm thinking to myself, she's going to get herself in trouble here because no water, it's dry,
that's
you're
right.
really on your own. I'm thinking, what is she doing? Why start there as opposed to up north?
Because I'm a knucklehead.
Just that simple. Aren't
no,
we all?
Because what I did is I knew where I wanted to end up. I knew I could hike about 3 months, so I could do about 1,100 miles in that time. And so I knew where I wanted to end up. And so I just traced my finger south. And wherever that beginning point was is where I began.
That's where we go.
And I didn't think it through. I didn't think, well, gee, you know, I'm from Minnesota, the land of 10,000 lakes. But yeah, it does turn out, I hate to report, very few lakes in the Mojave Desert.
Couldn't see one for a long time, right? 816-235-2888 is our phone number. Cheryl Strait is our guest. She's the author of Wild and several other books. She speaks tonight at 7 on the Country Club Plaza. Our email address, updatedate@kcur.org. Susie from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I have a comment and a question. I'm listening to you talk, and I'm absolutely spellbound by it because I feel like you're telling aspects of my story. I lost my father very, very suddenly, very unexpectedly, about a year and a half ago.
I'm sorry.
Well, thank you. Thank you for saying that. I appreciate it, and I'm sorry for your loss as well. But I can't tell you how many times I've said, my family has fallen apart. My foundation has crumbled beneath me. everything, so many aspects of my life. In fact, I read the book of Job because I thought, I just want to see what's coming next.
Mm, yes.
And, I, like you, I don't know if you would call what you did running away, but that's what I did. I ran away, not quite to the extent that you did, but I find refreshment and renewal in the mountains, and so I went and lived in a very isolated place where I could totally sequester myself mm-hmm. in the mountains for about 4 months. And it was, you know, it was just a very dark time, and I was also really happy to hear you say that you look back on this period of your life as being about 3.5 years long, because mm-hmm. when I hit that 1 year mark after my dad's passing, I expected things to be better. I thought, you know, all of a sudden the light would kind of come back on and people would sort of go back to this normalcy that I had once understood, and it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, it's good to hear you say that you were in that place for about 3.5 years, mm-hmm. but I could ramble, but I have a question.
Yes.
I'm wondering, have you experienced any another significant grief or loss issue since the passing of your mother? And I ask that question because this thing with my dad has been so difficult for everyone involved. And I think, oh my gosh, when we lose my mom, or
right,
what will happen? And it really scares me. And so after all that you've been through in your mm-hmm. experience, I'm just curious, have you had to deal with that again?
Yeah.
You know, well, first of all, I want to just address what you said about grief. And this is so much what, I mean, I have heard from thousands and thousands of people at this point about the grief story in Wild. And I think that so many people said what you just said, that you recognize yourself in me, essentially, that your journey and your experience with grief echoes mine in so many ways. And I think that what that tells us is we all have more in common than we know or like to think. I remember feeling so alone,
yeah.
so alone after my mom died, and so alone in my sorrow. And I thought that maybe it was too much, that I was, I was grieving wrong, because a year out, and it hurt worse than it did the day she died. And what I came to find through the tribe of thousands of people who I've found through my writing is, no, this is actually what it means to grieve someone who was essential to you. And sometimes that person is a friend, sometimes it's a parent, sometimes it's a child or a sibling, a spouse. And, you know, we get to love who we love, and we get to experience that magnificent loss in a big way that often takes years to heal. And one of the things that I felt that I really learned about grief along the way, and especially on the trail, it was that I'm never going to get over my mom being mm-hmm. dead. I want mm-hmm. my mom to be here. I want my mom to be in the listening audience right now, hearing
right.
me
sure.
talk, you know, and she's
how
not
proud she'd be.
Exactly. And mm-hmm. she never will be. And so what I came to grips with is that will always be sad. That will always be an absence, but I can live with it. I can accept it. I can surrender to the reality of her death, which is simple but profound.
You know, Cheryl, we're talking about grief here. I also wanted to ask about fear, because you talk about fear very directly in this book, because obviously you're a woman alone on the Pacific Coast Trail. Crest Trail?
Crest.
Crest Trail.
Crest.
So I wanted to talk to you about that. There were mountain lions out there that have been known to kill. In fact, early on, you came across some very fresh lion scat.
Yes.
There was dehydration to worry about. But you write at one point this: I told myself to put all those categories of scary stuff out of my head. My mantra was, I am not afraid. That actually was really helpful, you wrote. So much about fear is your inner voice. Tell us about that and how you overcame fear so directly as you did here.
Well, I decided to really lean into reason. So, you know, we all know that it's not as if people are dying in droves out on the wilderness trails of America. You know, I mean, that bad things can happen in the parking lot of, you know, your school. It can happen in your home. It can happen on the streets of a city or on
yeah.
a wilderness trail.
Yeah.
And so what I decided to do was one of the most dangerous things we do is drive cars, but we still all get in our cars.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I decided to do was lean into that and say, was I going to let my fear rule me? Was I going to let my fear prevent me from doing this big, cool thing that I wanted to do? I wanted to go on this long hike. I wanted to go alone.
And you really crushed the fear.
I crushed it.
You don't get the sense in this book at all that you had many moments of that. You really were on top of that.
Well, you know, one of the things that happens is pretty quickly, I started to feel really at home in the wilderness. Now, if I went out, every time I've gone backpacking alone since my hike, which I have done a few times.
I was going to ask you,
Yeah, every time, that first night or two, I'm uncomfortable. I hear the twigs, and I get a little spooked. And I have to go through that process again of just saying, it's okay. You know, that feeling is just one among many. And it's not the feeling that's going to rule you. And I also did that thing. You know, warriors, male warriors are taught to be brave,
mm-hmm.
you know. And part of being brave is just telling yourself that you're brave. It's just telling yourself that you're strong.
Yeah.
And so I decided to do that on behalf of myself in my little hike.
Oh, that's great. Let's go back to some phone calls here. Kathy from Kansas City, Kansas. Kathy, you're on with Cheryl Stray. Good morning.
Good morning. I hope you can hear me okay because I'm on my cell phone.
You're doing great, Kathy.
Hi, Kathy.
Hello, Cheryl. Oh, I can't believe how blessed I am to turn on my radio and hear you here in Kansas City. I'm going to speak tonight. I wish I could come and hear you, and maybe I'll try. But I just wanted to share with you that I'm a mother and a cancer survivor, just 1 year, just a little over a year out. And
good for you.
Yes,
during my, what I will call my 1,000-mile cancer journey with my family and my daughter and my son and husband, my sister and I and my daughter all read your book. I made it a wish list that we do, and it was just this one book, and it was your book. And I said, would you read with me the Cheryl Strayed book, Wild? And we all read it together on our nooks, and then we were able to talk about it, and I could, just as a survivor, just I can relate to a journey of my own, not walking the Pacific Crest Trail, but walking to, and I call it not just to survive, but just to thrive cancer. And today I'm in remission, and every day I get up, and that's where I'm going to stay. And
wow, that is so wonderful. You know what? I'm so touched by that.
Yeah,
that is,
I am too.
That's beautiful. And, you know, I think you're so right to say, you know, that thriving rather than surviving, and that also those journeys are really connected. You know, ultimately what Wild is about is, you know, it's not just the hike. It's really about that bigger journey that we all have to take,
and,
you know, that decision that we have to make to move forward even when it's difficult. And I'm so sorry you had to endure cancer.
Oh, no, you know, Cheryl, that was probably the best thing that ever happened in my life, for me to go on a journey where I had to see my soul and see it and appreciate it and value it and let it really surface.
Wow. Well, blessings to you, sister. And, you know, one of the values I had on the trail was keep walking. So keep walking, sister.
Yeah, you bet. Hey, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you here. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you. It was a blast.
You bet. That's Cheryl Strayed, the author of Wild. She's also the author of Tiny Beautiful Things, Advice on Love and Life from Dear Sugar and the novel Torch. And again, she speaks tonight at 7 at Unity Temple on the Plaza. Call Renaday Books in Fairway for more information. Their phone number, 913-384-3126. You can find more information on all of our broadcasts at kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, and Beth Lipoff. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.